Welcome to Inside Hillcat Nation, a different look at RSU Hillcat Athletics. Now your host, the voice of the Hillcats, Josh Haley.
Welcome to this Inside Hillcat Nation edition. I'm Josh Haley, your host, and glad to have you with us. And a reminder, you can check us out on your favorite podcast platform as well. We'll start off today's show with Rogers State Director of Athletics, Chris Ratcliffe, and we'll also be joined by members of the cross-country team who recently picked up some big-time results in their early fall season, as well as Bria Salazar from the Student Athlete Advisory Committee. But we'll start off with Chris Ratcliffe. And Chris, thanks so much for taking the time to be here with us.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here.
It's been a very interesting time in college athletics, to say the least. But even though there's still so much uncertainty with the pandemic, does it feel like life on a college campus is more stable now than even, say, 2 months ago when we all came back?
Oh, most definitely. 2 months ago when we were all sitting in cabinet, we're talking about, will we make it to Labor Day? And we'll be shutting the dorms down, all going home, and then be trying to figure out, are they going to allow student-athletes to stay on campus? Are we going to send them home? I think if you're a gambling man, most of us did not think we'd make it to Labor Day. But now here we are about to hit November, a week away from November, and we're going strong. We've managed to maintain our mitigation to keep COVID down on campus. Our dorms are open and our cafeteria is open, and we've been okay. We've had some cases on campus. We've had cases in athletics, but we manage them. And with the emergence of sports in the fall already, I've started to look a little bit more normal.
Just to provide some clarity out there to some of the fans, when this whole thing came to a screeching halt back in March, we had an athletic event going on at Rogers State, a softball doubleheader against Fort Hays State. News was basically flowing in by the minute during that doubleheader, and it really, even though it was a tough situation, the communication from you and the rest of the athletic department was very strong, and it allowed a lot of those players on both teams to be able to pretty much know the stakes going into what was their final game they would ever play. That turned into a really special moment, even in kind of a dark time. Walk us through that.
That was a very, very difficult time, and it was one of probably the most difficult times I've had as an athletic director. Losing a student athlete is one of the most difficult things, and it's unfortunate. We've lost a few in my career, but on that day, you had a feeling this might be going that direction. Didn't see it coming that quickly, but we knew it was going to happen probably. Because when you started, the Final Four, and you started seeing the Ivy Leagues pull out, different SEC and all those pulling conference tournaments, it was very difficult. And we stayed in contact with the conference offices, NCAA offices, and it was getting a lot of information. But then you get the call. This is it. And we are shutting down. We are not going to do anything. MIAA presidents all made their mind up. You get on the phone with Justin, Coach Barkley, and say, hey, they're in Kansas City having lunch, on the way, about to have practice, and at the NCAA tournament. First in our school's history. And it was a special moment. And to tell them, no, you need to turn the bus around. We're coming home. It's over. We talked to the two coaches at halftime, and between the doubleheader, and I said, hey, this is it. We are done. We're not going to play anymore. I said, the season's over. I said, but let's go out one more game. Let's have it one more game. And Josh, you were there, and have those players sit there in a huddle crying at makes me emotional now. Around the pitcher circle. It's just hands hugging, crying, and said, let's play one more last time. Leave that emotional moment, then have to go tell baseball. Then have to go down, pull track and field in, and tell them, and to each sport. And it was emotional. And so since March, it's been a roller coaster. And but these last 2 months, and I said, if we can start having some athletic events, start feeling more normal. And I think that's where we are now. We're getting closer there.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of cross-country events already, and that was kind of the first step of getting back to things. So what was the excitement level when it was announced that cross-country would be able to compete on a limited basis this fall, especially since that was the very first competition to say, we're back, we're resuming now?
It has been, honestly, an emotional roller coaster, because you start off that we're not going to have fall sports. And so you've told these student athletes they're not going to have fall sports. And the NCAA low, then comes back, you have a high, you can get your year back. And so you're all good. And then you have another low. And then all of a sudden we decide that you know, we can run a few cross-country matches if we follow a certain protocol. Out of the 14 MIAA schools, not all of them are doing it. And we felt our protocol with our testing capability, we could do it. And talked to the cabinet, talked to the COVID task force, and we're all in, you know, see how this goes. And so we tested, and it was a high. You know, it's like we actually are doing something finally. You know, this is our first sport to go out there. And I actually had a peer, the AD at Missouri Western, Josh Looney, who's a good friend of mine, call me all upset with me last week, fall break. He said, we're about to send our TV crew and everybody because we're going to be the first MIAA out there doing something. And he goes, then I looked it up. Y'all already played, ran cross country. Y'all gone rogue. He said, yeah. I said, we already ran. He goes, what is Rich Mountain? I said, it's a junior college. I said, but hey, we ran. You know, we won, and I'm excited. So he was happy for us. So we were able to run a small meet this week, and then we're having an unofficial conference meet next Friday, Saturday, 29th. And so it's going to be nice. I mean, our kids just have opportunity. I mean, practice gets old, you know, it just gets old. And so it was really exciting to get them out and run. Competition wasn't great, obviously, but it doesn't matter. It's opportunity. It's competition. And we all have to get out there and run. And it was great for them. We had a really good, more competition this past week in our, you know, we took a limited group because it was fall break. And they did outstanding. You know, we would have won both if we took our full team. So we're excited to get out there and run again one in a week and see where we stand.
Now, basketball obviously is the next scheduled step as far as competition goes. We're 4 weeks away from the start of basketball season. It's supposed to be November 19th on a Thursday. That seems like a long time for something to be able to change, but it'll probably pass by extremely fast for the athletic department because isn't it accurate to say that there's miles of additional steps to take in preparation for the season?
100%. You know, and this has been the thing that's been so slow, deciding, are we going to play basketball? And we give, you know, our CEOs, the presidents all have deadlines, and they said, okay, we're going to play on November 1st, but we'll make a final decision October 1st. October 1st came, well, we're going to make a decision in 3 weeks, you know, and so it's kind of like they kept on pushing things off. And, you know, and I have a staff that's unbelievable, and they like to prepare. You know, when you're dealing with, you know, Sarah Braun and Grant Ferris, you want to prepare. They're more type A. You want to have everything lined out. And it drove them crazy. And officially, today is Thursday. My days run together. Tuesday, the presidents at 11 o'clock decided this is what we're going to do. We are going to play basketball. Right now, we're going to be one of two conferences in out of 23 in the country that will play basketball on the first date possible, November 19th. And so I texted them. I said, we're on go. And but then that's 1 month away, and then we fought, even though we've been preparing, it doesn't until you know you're playing.
Right.
You now get to start selling tickets. We haven't sold a ticket, you know. And Grant and Sarah, and I jumped on the phone right away, and I started today and last night, starting to set up my meetings, started selling tickets, and it's gonna be looked so much different. But we're gonna get to play. That's the most important thing. Yes, we're only gonna have 25% capacity in the venue. But we're going to have fans. The other conference, the Great Lakes Valley Conference, they're not going to have any fans. And that's with Jury's Conference and, you know, Southwest Baptist up to Illinois. They're going to compete with no fans. And so we got 1 month to go. Grant Ferris, does our ticketing and our venue management, and he's trying to hire 24 people right now. He thought it was like 17, but now we have to have some extras. and then we have to throw I told him we had to hire our TV crew. So it's like find that many workers. You know, I was writing down notes today that we really have. Are we going to do traffic flow? What are we going to do? I mean, it's going to be real quick here.
Well, over the summer, NCAA Division II reduced the maximum number of allowed contests for this academic year for basketball because it got reduced to the number that it did. Mm-hmm. Basketball will only play conference games, which. You look at it from two vantage points. One, it's maybe a little bit of disappointment that you don't get to play as many games, but two, because it's all conference, every game is so important.
100%. And I was on those decision making when I was on our national organization Division II ADs, and when you are, you know, looking at the COVID, how much its financial impact has hit all across athletics, Division I down to Division III. There had to be some financial, you know, help out some of these universities. Now, some universities would be okay with budgets, you know, but most of them were not okay. And Division II didn't want to start cutting programs. That was what we try to stay away from. That was our thing. So we felt if we can cut some maximum contests back a little bit, it gets through 1 year and get through this pandemic. And it's lasted longer than we all thought. But So we cut back. And so in the MIAA, we'll play 22 games, and everyone's a conference game. And it will be tough. And there are no, Coach Barker's one of those, hey, by Christmas I'm in my groove and get going. It's not like that. You better bring it game one. And I forgot who we have our first game. And but you better bring it the first week. And so we're excited.
That obviously spans to all sports as well. So you have baseball, which will also essentially play a mostly conference schedule. There is some non-conference mixed in there, but it really runs that way for all sports. And so it creates an interesting dynamic. And it forced, like in a baseball's case, it forced a change in the scheduling format too.
And we're fans of it. Obviously, it's something different. We were experiencing last year going into MIAA where you play baseball three nines, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. I know it's traditional. MLB does it. Everybody else does it. It just has a lot of downtime and a lot of time in the hotel rooms, a lot of times on the road. As I know Coach Klimas and I talked about, he likes the new format. And this was also another cost savings. Baseball has dropped from 50 games to 40 games. And another cost savings is play two, a doubleheader and a single, which was what we've been used to. The only difference is, Josh, I don't know if it's all nines, though. It's not a 9-7-9. It'll be three nines. Mm. And Coach Klimas and I actually just talked. We're going to try to do Friday and then doubleheader on Saturday. But every sport, softball went from 56 to 44. Golf went from, they have days. And so they went from 21 to 16 days they can compete. Track and field got pulled back. So every sport got pulled back. The difference with basketball compared to those other sports is the other sports have some opportunities in their schedule for some non-conference competition. Basketball zones that have that opportunity. And it's all in. You're playing conference right off the bat.
One of the positive things, though, I do look at with the change in the baseball and baseball schedule particularly is if you go back and look at history, especially in this part of the country, you're probably going to alter 25 to 45% of your dates because of weather. So when you're not tied down to three dates and rather two, it gives you more flexibility to shift those and make those games happen.
And the way that we do it in MIAA, we don't even set the schedule. That's what Klimas and I are talking about. Yeah, 5 days to get to three games in on the consecutive days. So we might play Thursday, Friday. We might be Friday, Saturday. We might be Saturday, Sunday. And that's the unfortunate part, but it's what baseball people deal with and softball people. You just have to be ready to move. I mean, you might be playing Sunday, Monday, and come back and Thursday, Friday, and your arms got to be ready to go. It's just how it is.
Now, a lot of the student athletes are utilizing the extra year of eligibility if it was possible for them. What are some of the long-lasting impacts that the extra year of eligibility will have? And, how does it force coaches to look at their roster and their scholarships differently?
That is the slippery slope that we've had to talk about a lot on the national level. And now we're talking about it on our student-athletes level. When it first hit in the spring, we obviously had golf and baseball, softball, and some track kids. And there were student-athletes signed. We already signed. I mean, it was done. And so it had a good impact on our budgets because we basically had to guarantee our student athletes that all want to come back. We'll give them another year. Now going into this semester, you're looking at fall kids for like fall sports. Well, that's going to hurt those seniors. And those seniors who are out there in high school, there might not be opportunities for them. The money's not there. And so that's what's unfortunate. We're able to make those decisions now on campus because sign day's in November. So soccer knows so does golf. But it also has lasting impact. I mean, now your juniors are about to be seniors. They're still juniors. And so you're starting to recruit kids that are 2-3 years out.
Yes.
I don't have the money. What do I do with that kid? Mm-hmm. And you have to have some hard decisions. And with basketball just announced 2 days ago that they're getting an extra year. So all of our basketball teams now will have a redshirt year. If you play this year, you're redshirting basically. So what do you do there? I mean, how do you improve your team if your team needs to be improved? And, do you cut back seniors? What do you do? It's not easy. And Justin and I were talking about that. Every coach and I talked about it, how you manage that. And you feel bad for high school kids because this is not just Division II. Division I did the same thing. And so all these seniors in high school. And it's interesting, though. It's the hard part is that the NCAA says we don't have to count that aid. So what does the universities do? Do we all of a sudden give them, open the pocketbook? Now we're talking about budgets on campus for the university, and some schools can do it and some schools will not be able to do it. We're fortunate here at Rogers State that our university was dedicated and taking care of those seniors in baseball, softball, golf, and track, and we whereas other institutions, even Division I, said we can't afford it. And but it's going to have a lasting impact. I mean, we're talking about it. On the positive side, it's going to get these kids graduated, and even more positive, a lot of them will start working on their MBA.
Yes.
With our master's and MBA, will have opportunity to start doing that in their fifth year. So it'll help out Dr. Willis's department, and it'll help all of us out. And then, you know, that's the positive part of it.
We're talking with Roger State Director of Athletics, Chris Ratcliffe. Chris, what about the athletic training staff? I've always admired how much communication happens between different schools and teams' athletic training staffs before competition when you go on the road, but I know that it's heightened tenfold now with the circumstances.
We have a phenomenal staff. I have to tip my hat to Trey and Jeff. Trey, our Director of Sports Medicine, and our Assistant Director of Sports Medicine, Jeff. Jeff's taken on two roles. He's actually was on the COVID task force with us, with me and the staff, and he actually clears everybody on campus. He's the one who's, since August, once we're back to campus, he's had cleared you. He's taken care of every COVID positive and negative. He's been on top of it, and then we finally got some help for him this past week, so he's starting to ease out of that. But Trey and I met this morning. I mean, we meet almost every day. Trey and I talk, and we've talked more now than we've ever talked, and they're just phenomenal. And on top of that, they're having to maintain their normal. You know, people, we're still practicing. We're still competing, you know, going hard in the gym, you know, on the field and, you know, the golf course. We're running. I mean, and so we're still getting injured. We're still having all those things that normal happens. But those two, and we have added a new intern this year, Annette, it just all stepped up. I mean, Trey's had to take on more. So has Jeff. I mean, Trey's having to work with manuals with me. I mean, now we're about to start testing in-house, you know, for COVID. Basketball starts. It's testing everybody every week on basically November 1st, and how we manage that and balance all that. So Trey and Jeff and now Annette, it's just a phenomenal job they've been doing.
We know that there's been guidelines in place for a long time regarding what practices look like and what game days should look like, but are those things constantly evolving between the conference athletic directors? Is, you know, here's something we discovered, maybe this might work a little better than this, or things like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's to the smallest thing that we have electric whistles, you know, and so that, you know, that you use an electric whistle and you know, so you don't have to blow, you know, the whole Fox 40, it's what it's the premier whistle, the spit's all coming out because you're blowing, but it's just a different way of doing things, and we're starting to get used to it. And I mean, I was reading the manual today, just going back through the MIAA COVID manual for basketball, and what am I missing? What do we got to do? And write notes down, because we're going to miss something. Even though we're pretty good at everything we're doing daily, you know, screens or temperature checking, but it's every day. I mean, we'll be masked in the gym. Every student athlete, when they're on this, every basketball player, when they're sitting on the sideline, we'll be in a mask. Coach Barkley, unfortunately, we won't get that calendar with all of his different faces because he'll have a mask on. You know, so you won't be able to see all of his smiles or smirks or upsets because he'll be wearing a mask while he's coaching. It's just different. And, but it's just a way, and I'll take different if we get to compete, and that's what we're all of our model. If we can get out there and compete, we'll figure out how to do it, and we'll figure the money out, the test, we'll figure out the mask, the protocol, the 25%, as long as we get to get out there and play games again.
And just to reiterate to the fans and the community, basketball season is supposed to kick off on November 19th, and the exciting part is that you get to be at home early on, and even though it's limited capacity, it still seems very special to be able to involve the community and get to start things off and get back to competition with basketball at home.
100%. We kicked off our Hillcat renewals, and then we'll try to sell a few tickets after that, and but it's a great opportunity to, you know, thing is we're bringing fans back to town. You know, we'll have some visitors. We'll have to set up some seats for visitors, but, you know, back to our eateries and helping the local business and helping us. But I wish we were on the road first game so we could see everybody's hiccups, you know, but where we can do better. But, hey, that's how it is. Maybe we'll set the bar and everybody will see how we do things at Roger State. And when they go back, hey, they were doing this. We need to do this. And so we're excited. November 19th, we're less than a month now. We're about 30 days away and ready to compete.
Chris, thanks for always taking the time with us and for all the transparency as usual. Much appreciated.
You're welcome. Thank you so much, Josh.
He's the Director of Athletics at Roger State, Chris Ratcliffe. We'll be back for more on Inside Hillcat Nation, talking to cross-country athletes who have had some solid results already this year, as well as Bria Salazar, the Student Athlete Advisory Committee President here at Roger State. That's all to come on Inside Hillcat Nation.